Okay, so we'll start then with somebody else. I've looked at one other one in detail. I have notes on it. That's from Lena and Paritosh and Jesse. Okay, where are you guys? And then I'll have to... I'll write notes on all these and share them around anyway. Well, okay, so everyone gets that and they see what we mean here. Right? Survival first, the probability of remaining alive. I mean, that to me is almost a tautology. In other words, that's saying the same thing. A survival curve is the probability of staying alive, isn't it? But the probability of staying alive is zero eventually. I mean, the one thing in all of this is they're all dead. So there's only two certainties, death and taxes. So we have to be careful about that.
But I meant like instead of
having... I know. But I'm saying when you talk about the probability of dying, it's one here, unless you specify a time scale. Oh. Right? Yeah, so be careful. Now, so that looks like our curve a bit. Oh, but this is male and female. Yeah, okay. Now, any comments on this? Or any questions?
So, at the beginning, like, can you visually say if it's proportional or not? Because it's not
it's very hard system. From this to say. From yeah. Two curves like that. You mean proportional hazards?
Yeah.
Nearly impossible. Yeah. Curves like this are very tough. Yeah. The survival or cumulative curves or the opposite of cumulative are very, very hard. So the best way to do that is to go to rates and do it in chunks, you know, like in the Lexis diagram or something like that. Yeah. But there's two things here. Just one comment I would make first. It's just a personal thing with me. But I don't think of these as strata in the same way. Because to me, this is the primary contrast, is between male and female. So for me, things like strata would be subgroups of those, classes. The classes, are especially the class, would be strata. Right? But to call these strata is nothing, you know, they're the primary one. I think of when you have a stratified analysis, I mean, the problem comes from terminology about the way things are taught. When somebody says we did a stratified analysis, what do they mean by that?
They did separated on a certain subgroup?
Yeah, they did separate analyses for different subgroups or strata. There you might actually be interested in effect modification or something else. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But when you do adjustment, or use the adjusting factor as a strata or something like that, to me that's separate, right? So when I think of something, a stratified sample or something like that, that just made me a way of getting the data. But if you come out with a single number for whatever, the strata are kind of merged in and you're adding over the strata. You're adding over them. Like Mantel-Hensel, right? You're adding or you're adjusting across them or something like that. But when you say, when I hear the word stratified, I'm expecting several analyses, one for each or whatever, and that's effect modification. So the words are thrown around a lot in courses and never clear what are in talking, what people really mean. And when I hear strata, the first thing I think is, you know, I think of, oh, well, maybe there were confounding factors and they matched or did something like that. But I think of the stratifying variables as nuisance variables. They're not the central variables. Unless you're looking for effect modification, in which case they become more central. But to me, there's age and class should be out of the way here, over on the side, and not see that you've taken care of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Just a word. So I would have said contrast or male versus... You don't need anything. You just say male versus female.
Okay. Yeah.
Right? Okay, so that's one point, but now there's a broader point for all of you. Can I look at your code? Well, probability of remaining alive against time to death. Okay, I would say time from something onwards, and I would say the probability of being remaining alive at the time indicated, right? You know what I mean? In general, in a function, if you have on the y-axis, you can have something as of the x in the x-axis. It's the probability of something as of the x in the x-axis. Right? It's another way to talk about relating the y-axis to the x-axis. But here I get this sense that this doesn't mention time, right? But this is time, but it's to death, and here's about alive. So I would have said, I think what we had in our diagram, I think we had something year, our anniversary. At each anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic, what percent were still alive at each anniversary? I think that's how we wrote the title in the BMJ one. So on the y-axis, proportion still alive as of each of the anniversaries on the x-axis. See what I mean? It's always worth trying to link the y to the x, and then it makes you cohere as to what they mean.
Are you mentioning, like, saying to have that link in the title itself, or even have the link?
You can have it here.
In the axis, so like refer to the x-axis sort of in the
Yeah. It's hard to do sometimes. You may have to do it in the caption or something. Mm-hmm. But if you're trying to explain to somebody for the first time who's never seen a survival curve, or any kind of curve, what do you mean? You mean the y for each of the x's indicated is another way you hear it said, right? For each of the x's indicated. So look up an x, and this will give you the y for that x. You know, it's that kind of communication is how I think of it.
So it would be like just to say probability of remaining alive at time t, and then call the x-axis time t.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. That's it. You're making a direct link so people can say, oh, okay, I see what you're getting at.
Okay.
And they can go back and forth, yeah. But I think the fact that we can, you know, label them separately means we don't always think of the link in the same way.
Yeah.
And I think the labeling of a y-axis is very, very important in communication in general. So, you know, the old days people would just put survival here. If you look at the package by default, it might say survival or something or whatever. You need to tailor this. Yeah. Proportion still remaining alive. Yeah. Okay. But now, what about what x-axis or the time axis? Anybody? So, I mean, here we're talking about a median, right? Where's the median? It's about 50%.
Oh, that's true. It shouldn't be time to death. It should just be time.
Because
it's a probability out of...
A survival curve is actually both. A survival curve is the proportion still alive at the time. Mm-hmm. It's also the proportion living past the time. So it's both the probability that the time will be greater than t, the time of death will be greater than t, it's the probability of still being in the initial state at time t. The initial state is alive, the second state is death, dead is the second state, right? So you can think of it as a status. The status with respect to the first state at each time. That's one way. So that's, think of it as a prevalence. What's the prevalence of live people at each point? It's a prevalence of being in the first state. But you can also think of it as the probability that the time of death would be after that time. So both interpretations are allowed. See what I mean? Sometimes it's nicer to think of it as just a state. What percent are still in the initial state at that time? So then, see, actually the way you think of it is like that. Remaining alive means the initial state.
Yeah.
You see? Still alive. And then, obviously, the alive are here, the dead are here. And you're just switching the states. Yeah, moving. And you're always moving up to the other stage, which is the dead state. There's a lot of connections between states and events in epi that are, again, worth kind of cultivating. There must have been a few little... This looks to me like they're censoring here, right? These little
Yep.
First of the lines, yeah. There's two or three of them. Yeah. Yeah. Now, you guys have found those, and so we'll fix them up. But anyway, okay. So the median seems to be around 17. What did I say? Is that right? 17. And for women? Yeah. Maybe a little less than 75, more than 75. So, any comment on that? I'm surprised that... This is time from when?
From birth, actually.
From birth.
Yeah, which,
that's the point. That's the point. So you chose birth as the time axis. The same way Redlmeyer did, by the way, when he was talking about the actresses and actors in the Titanic, which we're going to do next week. He said time of birth is natural because everyone understands it. It's used in a lot of time axis studies. But what other option could we have for the time zero? 1912, whatever age you were in 1912. That's another one. Yeah. I think that's what we chose. So what we chose in the BMJ one is we put this as 1912, 1913, 1914. And then we say the x-axis is all the anniversaries of the sink. And then we put it that way. Preferences for one or the other?
I like birth, because it takes into account how old they were like when they got on the ship, which I like.
But do you think the other one gives you more information? Because they become survivors after the...
It becomes what?
They become the survivors after the event.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that depends.
So you're counting them, what would make them special is that they survive, so you, I guess.
Like, for us, they've always been... that cohort was like established after the event.
Yeah, in fact, that Titanic cohort, does it, now that you bring it up, what's the definition of a cohort in Epi? As opposed to an open population, which is a whole other story. An open population is one thing in Epi, a cohort or a closed population is something else. They're two entirely different methods of doing studies, or looking at things. So what's the definition, the distinction between an open population and a closed cohort?
And nobody could enter after.
Huh?
Nobody could enter after like a certain time, like in a cohort.
In a cohort, you get into a cohort by an event. An event brings you into a cohort. What's the event here? Sinking of the Titanic. The Nobel Prizes, what's the event? The call from Stockholm. You're now in the Nobel Prize nominees. Yeah, winners. They never tell us the nominees, by the way. 50 years later, they tell us. And people are looking at them now. Yeah, so you enter the Nobel laureate cohort once you get the call. Yeah.
So yeah? Can the event for your entry into the cohort just be random selection?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah. Framingham.
Right.
Framingham. They knocked on your door. Would you like to be in the random people? Absolutely. But the P is there's a time zero and it's an event. Do you want to be in? Yeah. As soon as you said so, you're in.
Okay.
Yeah. And then there's no getting out of it.
Yeah.
There's no getting out of it. So the main thing is, it's constituted by an event that brings you in. Right. That's a cohort. What's an open population? What defines open populations? So in other words, membership in the cohort is defined by an event. I'm going to send you this, by the way, a little piece with documentation so it isn't just my words. How do you define membership in an open population? And give us an example of an open population, first of all. I would say McGill students. Is that an open population? Hmm?
Yes.
Yes. What makes it so?
People live on the corner.
Yeah. What defines being in it? How do you stay in it?
By
yes. So it's a state. You're a McGill student. right? That's a state. So in an open population, membership is by the state, right? Being a McGill student. Because eventually you will stop being a McGill student and you will no longer be a McGill student. So you're not in the, it's new students are in next year or the year after when you leave, right? Yeah, so membership is by state, right? McGill student, that's the state, right? You can leave that state, and when you leave that state, you leave the open population. So there's in and out, right? Whereas the other one, and you could come back in again a couple of years later in the McGill one, right? If you become a student a second time. But in the closed cohort, cohorts are by definition closed, one entry brings you in and then you're there forever. Right? You may die and leave in that sense, but you haven't left the Nobel laureate, or you haven't left the Titanic. You're still in the Titanic cohort even after you die. Yeah. So that's the difference. Cohort, you get in by an event and you never leave. Open population, membership is for as long as you're in the state that defines the population. You can get in, you can get out. It's dynamic, right? This Titanic one is not dynamic. Is that concurrent with congruent with current teaching, or is it a bit looser than that? It's fairly close, yeah. That's the official way. People are loose about it. The next thing you start people talking about is open cohorts and closed cohorts. And when I do that, I hear that, I get a shiver in my spine. It makes no sense to talk about open and closed cohort. A cohort is the word. Cohort has to do with an enclosure in Latin. And it has to do with staying closed and staying there. Yeah. But we're very loose now about these terms, and it doesn't help anybody. Yeah. Yeah. So if we're going to talk as a cohort, then you're not in the cohort until the Titanic sinks.
Yeah, but I don't necessarily think, I mean, I don't see why that means that we can't look at, you know, their retrospective years lived before the Titanic event. Like.
All right. Where will I find you an example? Maybe 20 years ago now, and I'll send you this reference too, because it's highly relevant to what we're talking about today. There was an article in American Journal of Public Health by a retired management professor, and he was taking a course on jazz, and a university course on jazz. And he noticed that the jazz players that they studied in the course, you know, he had this impression that jazz players all die young, from wine, women, and song, right? Isn't that the tradition of jazz players, is that they live a rough life and that they die young, right? Same for lots of rap and, you know, music people as well. They a lot of sex and rock and roll and drugs and, you know, everything and rap and all this. Same with jazz, that it had a bad reputation that there was a lot of drinking, lots of carousing, lots of risky lifestyles and so on. So this guy had been read in their syllabus, they had these various jazz players or people, jazz greats, and they were studying them, and he noticed, because what he would have in the paper in his thing is, you know, just about in any biographies, if you're alive, they just put your year, right? If I there, they'd put me as 1947 dash, right? They leave it open because I'm still alive. If you're a dead jazz player, it'll be 1901 to 1959, right? So you'll have the two. So he started looking at the length of life of these people. He didn't know what to do with the censored people, but both of these jazz players were dead already. So he started looking at how long they lived. And said, I don't see, they're living 78 years. I don't see what's this old story about how they don't live long. And so who could he compare them with? I'm trying to say that jazz players get a bad rap. That's what he put it as. And he says, I want to show they live just as long as everybody else. So who could he compare them with? Well, he had the year of birth of each jazz player. He says, look, I'm going to look up life expectancy at birth for these. So here's a jazz player born in 1907. We can look up the American life tables from 1907, and that would say expectation of life for 1907 at birth was 64 years. I have another jazz player, you know, 1920 or something, what their expectation of life, looked them up. So he did a paired comparison between the jazz player, how long they lived, and the expected duration of life from the life tables of the year they were born. And he said, lo and behold, my God, nearly everybody outlived the life expectancy. Nearly everybody outlived the life expectancy. So what's all this thing about short-lived and all that sort of stuff? And so he made two mistakes in that. What are the two mistakes in that kind of analysis? The first one to do where he got the source of the life expectancy.
That shouldn't be based on like their year of birth, because it changed.
That's right, because as things went improved over time, life expectancy has gotten better. Death rates have fallen. So any time you compare that, yeah, the life expectancy now compared to back then is way better for the same age. Yeah. So that's one, that life expectancies are always more drastic and more pessimistic than actually what happens. And Peter Armitage has a lovely example. The biostat people have seen it in my course. There's two kinds of life tables. There's cohort life tables, which are actually following the people you were born with, right? But in order to do that, you actually have to keep doing them every year and keep track of your class, right? So Peter Armitage he was born in the 1930s, and he took the life table from 1930s. And it said that, I don't know, so many of them are still going to be alive at age 50, right? He took the life tables being done as a cohort, where we're actually following that group, and a lot more of them were alive than were predicted from the death rates they were dealing with in the 1930s. So that's an improvement in reduction in mortality rates, so life expectancy is getting better. So that helped his case, of course, right? Yeah, because he should have updated the expectations as each year of life you go on, you have to do it with that. So that's one, but that's only a minor one. But the bigger one is what? That's the bigger flaw in his argument. If you ever tangle with Rothman, and he's mellowed a bit over his years. Rothman wrote a letter to the editor of the American Journal, and he gave this guy hell about how stupid he was that he missed these two points.
Oh, that they weren't jazz players at birth. Just like these people weren't Titanic's.
Yeah, but Rothman was nasty to the guy. Come on, how can you say that, you know? Yeah, they weren't. You have to wait until you're an adult to be a jazz player. So who's the proper comparison for jazz players? It's not people who are born with you. Yeah, it's the other people in your class. You know, when you're 25 and you become a jazz player or a well-known jazz player, and also to become a well-known jazz player, it's even more, right? Exactly, so they live longer than the non-whatever. Yeah, so there's a lot of selection going on, so the only way to do it is, well, let's take, computer science guys from the same class, or take painters, or take your plumbers, or, you know, whoever you want. Yeah, but they've got to be alive the same year you became a jazz player.
But that's that's a little bit different than the Titanic example, because it's like, so the implication for the jazz players is like the things that are associated with the lifestyle of a jazz player are what are supposedly supposed to contribute to your earlier mortality. So we actually do have to wait till you are a jazz player to look at that. But I don't think that the people who survived the Titanic were doing anything specifically different before they got on the ship.
I think they were.
Would that be?
Well, if we're comparing internally, this is a little different. If we're comparing internally male and female,
yeah,
you're probably okay. It's a little safer. Yeah, I see. But suppose we compared these males with American males, not with females, but American males.
Okay.
Now do you see a problem? I agree with you that everybody was alive here, and the clock starts, but if you compare this curve with American people, you start American people at age...
Zero.
Yeah. But let's say you have a 25-year-old now who gets on the boat. Why should you credit that whole 25 years to them? They had no chance to die in those 25 years. You saw 2 cases of meningitis in the first year of life alone. The people born that year, when you were 25, the people born, your classmates, a bunch of them are gone already, or would have been gone at that time.
Oh, but they could have, it's immortal time-wise.
Huh?
It's immortal time-wise. Because they couldn't die before they got on the Titanic.
That's right. That's right. You have to have a group that can't die. Yeah, one of the conditions being in this study is you are alive. So you could not have died in meningitis at age 7 and be in this. I mean, it's irrelevant in this case because we're dealing internally. But if you're dealing with an external comparison group, it's very irrelevant. You know, it's very irrelevant. So that's what poor Rothman went after the poor guy with. Is, oh my God, you know, come on, how stupid can you be, kind of thing. That's what it is, yeah. Here it's, yeah, it's probably a lot less dangerous here. But it's still an odd thing. Redlmeyer did the same thing. Redlmeyer used their birth for actresses and actors getting a nomination in their 30s and 40s. What's that got to do with anything? The contest starts to me at the time you get off the boat. At time zero, it's a common time zero here for everybody. Yeah, a different age, but a common time zero. Can't do it. So I think it makes more sense to talk about remaining life rather than total life. So the others, some of the others did it by 45 years. I think it's coming to the same thing, because if you work out here, what was the average age of the passengers? Did anybody look at that? The average age when they got off the ship.
Let's see.
You see, this is actually a key number. Because even to know whether the male-female comparison was fair, were the women older than the men when they got off?
That's how you can go for age. Like,
yeah. But the first thing, you know, we should look at how it was. I think it was like 27 and 29 was the average age. Something like that. But that's the key to confounding, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is you got to look at their average age. Yeah, exactly. So I think it's only a couple of years difference. So... So I think that's a bit strange. The other way you can tell sometimes, if this is immortal time bias, is what you're talking about, right? It's not quite the same here because they're both in the Titanic, but if you had a group from outside and a group from inside and you didn't start them at the same place, you would see curves that are straight flat across the top. Because that's your key to say they can't possibly have died, because in order to get there, they had to be jazz players.
So like the comparison group would be going down a bit, but then reference would be...
That the reference, yeah. Like if this was a curve of jazz players,
right.
Jazz players would be alive until they're jazz players.
Right.
And then they can start dying.
Yes.
You see what I mean? So that's immortal time problems, right? But I don't think it's a big an issue here, but it's still a bit strange to me that. But I mean, the good thing is that they were close to average age anyway, the men and women at the beginning. But suppose they weren't. Suppose there was a 10-year difference, and this would include that.
Yeah.
Yes. But I agree with you, age is an important, it's very important.
But these are just without any covariance, like without age being taken care of. Right?
Mm-hmm. Right. But the Captain Meyer, I would have started the clock at 1912. Not when they're born, right? Although I can make a case in a minute when we're doing the Cox model, that should be starting the clock and using time as the age as the time factor. But that's a separate topic. Okay, so what was that? That was my main thing here. Yeah, okay, good, okay. So I like this next one, yeah? So you guys made it simple. Is that your idea? Whose idea is this?
I think
Lena? Most of the paradox? Oh, yeah. Okay. But anyway, There were five censored. I thought there were three alive, and there's a few others we don't know what happened, or there's some funny things. They're probably filled in by now. But what I would have done is I wouldn't have removed them, because some of them had lived a long time, hadn't they? Are they censored, like, right away? We don't know anything about them? Or they were still alive, right?
It's just the pluses.
Yeah, it's just that their deaths are zero instead of one.
There's one around...
Yeah, but I mean, this to me, this plus here seems to me you should keep them. They're nearly dead, yeah. So they've lived a long time. They're nearly dead, so that's somebody. That's where I had the argument with the BMJ, and I said, let's between the three of them give them 20 more years, and I'll do a T test. That's what I said, basically. Yeah, but I would keep them essentially. But you give them a time. It doesn't make much difference here, but yeah. But I don't like the idea of dropping censored people.
But they're so, because they're so cute.
Hmm? I know, yeah. But I would rather estimate when they died, impute when they died. In fact, you could impute them very easily, right?
Yeah.
You could impute them. That's and you can use the Kaplan mark to impute them and give them how many more years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's actually one representation of the Kaplan mark curve, is that the redistribute to the right procedure of the Kaplan-Meier curve is basically saying you're imputing any censored person to die just like the others after them. So same idea. Okay, so now I'm on very familiar territory now. This is good, because now I'm with you. But you guys now are using... You're using time from birth still, though, right?
Again, yeah, we did that throughout the entire thing.
Okay, but it would flip by about 25 years if you do the other. Okay, but all right, fair enough. So now, interpret this. 69 is the average longevity of the our age of death, if you like, of males, and it's about 4 years longer, 5 years longer for females.
Yeah.
Good. And then the next one.
We just added class.
Good. Yeah.
Class.
Yeah.
So it's a little less, but yeah.
All right. Good. And so it's still at 4 years and a half now instead of five, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think you stopped, did you?
Well, then we just did the Lexis diagrams that you used.
Right. But is there any other variable anybody else would add here? I guess no if you put birthday in, because now everybody is the same at the birthday, right? But if you were doing this, like some people were doing this, starting the time at the time of the boat, what else could you put in then?
Age.
You could put age in. Yeah, you could put age in then as an adjusting factor, right? Couldn't you?
But for us, since we use age as technically it was from birth to...
I know. Right, so you can't put age in here because everyone... Well, this is what I'm saying. If I try to put age in here, people would say to me, you can't put future variables into a regression. It's one of the key things is when you talk about a regression... In Cox-Miller or any time thing, you can't put future things that you don't know about yet in there. That's why it's kind of weird that if you were actually setting yourself back at time zero when they're born, we didn't even know they were going to be on the Titanic when they were born.
That's fair.
You know, so yeah, at what age you would be when you went on the Titanic? Yeah, there's a lot of funny things, but yeah. But if you start at the Titanic, then you could put their age in as well. But if you put their age in then, and you put their age of death, you're effectively subtracting age of death from age. You can give it a coefficient of 1. And then that's basically saying what you're putting in the regression is remaining years of life. Yeah. You can still do that. Yeah. Okay, and then it didn't change much, but yeah, I was expecting that. Okay, and then the last one was the Lexis one. And I think you did this just to... practice it, I think, right?
Yeah, I just wanted to see what you're... Because I'd never seen one of these before, so I just wanted to see the code.
Exactly, yeah. And the whole point of the Lexis one we come to in a minute is you can decide each square of 5 or 10 years by whatever. You can talk about person time and death. So person time becomes the Poisson denominator, if you like, and the numerator becomes the number of deaths. And you do it at kind of an aggregate level, not at the individual level anymore. So your analysis now becomes chunks of person time, right? Yeah, rather than individuals. So the Lexis thing will eventually, you can move it over into aggregate stuff. Okay, and the last one you did, I think, did you do the Poisson regression? You did, right, yeah. I will change this a little bit. Survival at the end is a rare event. That's true, but Poisson regression is not actually looking at the end thing. The Poisson regression is actually looking, the way you divide it up is you think of it this way. Here. See here, what you do is you have a chunk, let's say, you see those squares? Those blue squares?
Yeah.
So you basically have in here a blue square, right? It depends how wide you make it. Five, you can make it 5 by 5, 5 by 1, 1 by 5, whatever you want. But basically, this is, in the old days, this was called person time analysis. It wasn't even called Poisson regression. And this is how they did their Mantel Hensels and everything, and observed and expected cases, all that sort of stuff. So anyway, you would have here, as your denominator, a certain amount of person time, and on the top you'd have deaths, right? Number of deaths. So the deaths would be in here, right? So there might be 17 deaths in here. This could be 17, and this could be 189,000, you know, 180, so person years. Right? So the person years were got by adding all the bits of lines that went through that rectangle. That's how you did it. So it was all bookkeeping, keeping track of the individual contributions to the total person time. But it was very big 34 years ago when people didn't have a lot of fancy methods and individual data, so they always reduced stuff to this, especially in occupational epidemiology. This is the big thing. Breslow and Day's book is full of this. It's still useful today to think of it because you can now think about rates very easily. And even the link to the Poisson distribution is a lot easier. So I think of this as just a few dots. That's the Poisson count inside a certain amount of person years. But it has nothing to do with the individual anymore. It's about an amount of person time and a number of cases. And then what affects this rate then is where you are in age and where your gender and all that sort of thing. And you can move the rate function can be put into the Poisson regression. The rate function can be modified. So it's, to me, it's a very transparent way to do things. Because you can see, you know, people, you could sit them down and say, look, there's this many person years, this many deaths, everyone can understand it. If you had enough data, you could do the raw analysis almost. Right? But it's very much away from the idea of the one person anymore. It's an aggregate idea. Yeah?
So in that kind of person time analysis, you end up with maybe 20 rates, I guess?
Exactly. You have every grid, every little rectangle becomes a line in the regression.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's chunks of experience.
Right.
And each chunk, you would have to put this one in, and this would tell you this is the chunk for here. You'd index it by this and by this, though. So you'd have to have these two covariates that go along with the chunk.
Right.
See what I mean?
Right.
So you have the age of the chunk and the year of the chunk.
So people in their 60s in the 40s.
That's right, that's right. That's exactly what it is. Yeah, yeah, exactly. If you follow through actually the Poisson regression, that is what it does. If you actually look at it, you'll see there's as many rows as there are chunks. And it's up to you to make it smaller or bigger. Yeah, and then it's Poisson regression nowadays. But in the old days, it was more just they would do observed and expecteds and all sorts of things like that. Especially if you were doing one of these relative to an American population. So you would have observed deaths here, and this much person time. You would multiply that by the American rate, and it would be an expected number. And then you'd have the observed number and the expected number, and you'd add them up across the chunks. And then you'd have a total observed and a total expected, and you'd make an SMR. So when Jean-François Boivin, my neighbor upstairs, when he was here doing his thesis at Harvard, he said, this bookkeeping used to drive him crazy. He'd spend 6 months Fortran programming because you had to work out, you'd have a line for a person, and then you'd have to see, chop up the person's time to see how many person years they dropped into this. And they're not easy. This one he goes through here and he goes through here. He has a small piece. This one might have the whole 5 years. This guy might have only this. And then you have to track the next one, the next one. bookkeeping like you wouldn't believe. Yeah. That epi package does it in 10 seconds. The epi package, first thing the epi package does, it slices up the diagram this way. You apply it a second time and it slices it this way. And so now every line gets sliced into smaller and smaller pieces. And the bookkeeping is all done for you. So it's a good thing. Because it was the most boring part of the whole thing. Yeah. And people would go crazy with the bookkeeping. Yeah. But it's a set of, today, a set of chunks of person time and numerators, and then indexed by the covariates. So they have to be brought along with it. So you lose a little bit because they're grouping. You don't have the actual ages. You have maybe an age range. But you make the bin small enough that it's smooth enough to get what you want. Yeah, so that's how it works. So that's good. And one thing I wanted to hear then is just to show you the coefficients. Yeah, so here you go. Is this it? Age, Lexis diagram, class. No, this is the Lexis itself with the Poisson. No, I know what you say. You didn't show the, if you'd show the Poisson chunks, you would see them. They're one row per
chunk.
Per chunk, okay. Yeah. And the female chunk is in a separate one than the male chunk. You see what I mean?
Okay.
So they're underneath it. So they're just regression. So each amount of experience, each observation now is a chunk. And you index it by whatever, and so then all the regular things go through.
Why is PER included in the model of the covariate?
Which one? PER?
Yeah.
Well, the notation is this. The notation that the guy did this, this is Carlsonsen, he's a guy in Denmark who wrote this package. It, traditionally in EPI, in the Lexis diagram, this is called period. It's calendar time. And the other one is called age. So age period. So this is the time period and this is the age rate. So he set it up to, it has to be PER or something like that. Maybe you can change it or not. Yeah, but PER actually stands for calendar time in chunks. Yeah, so that's what. Where was it? Yeah. So age, and again, you have to be careful which way we did age, but if age is more or less, even though if it's in chunks, if it's more or less on the original age scale, do you notice something? Remember our 0.08 from the Cox model, was it? What did you use? But this is the same 0.08, basically.
I mean, it's also if you...
Because this age now, this age is not the age you started at.
Yeah.
This is now your age being moved along. Because it's which age chunk are we talking about? So it's the age of the chunk. What age is it? Is it all there, the 50-year-olds, the 55, whatever, when they were that? Yeah. So this no longer refers to age at the beginning. So the whole idea of it being back to people is gone now. This is an aggregate analysis.
Yeah.
Right? Which to me is still actually very concrete. People could imagine this. You get lost in all the details of the individuals. But this, the demographers can follow this. And I'll have to find for you, Jay Kaufman sent me just a couple of weeks ago, a very nice article from France where what they're doing with the Lexis diagram now is they're coloring in the death rates. And so they have death rates colored. And if you imagine this, this Lexis diagram here, put colors and forget the people now, just put death rates in a two-dimensional thing like this, with calendar and with age. And you have a heat coloring. What's it going to do? The heat coloring, as you go up this axis, is going to go up by 8% per year. Right? So it's going to get much more intense up at the top. Right? Why do you think the gradient is as you go this way?
Lighter.
It has to get lighter.
Yeah.
Because in the last 100 years, death rates have halved. Death rates today are half of what they were 100 years ago, or less than that. Right? So yes, so you have a heat going up this way, and heat falling as you go this way. Right? The other thing he did, so what's really neat about, he took a real data set from France, and so he has 1900 to 2000. And then he has age, and you see exactly what you expect with the whatever, but what else would you see in it? And he was taking nails in France. And this is live. This wasn't. This was all of, you know, France for 100 years. So it's an open population now. I'm not talking about closed anymore. Talk about open. Right? It's the whole. Everybody there could be in the new brethren than not. So what do you think was happening? So, you know, very little going on down here, very light, and then you come to. Actually, it was here. There was some very dark here, and some very dark here. What are those? World, the two world wars in France were awful for France. There was huge losses. They lost huge amounts of their young people, men. Yeah, so you had 5 years worth here of war casualties that were huge for the first war, the same for the second one. You would have also, if you really looked at it very carefully, even in the women, you would see the casualties from the Spanish flu. So they'd be there in just 1 year, and then they'd be gone. Right? So it's a very, very useful thing for understanding, you know, the two axes. Because you have the two axes. Calendar time can sometimes have something to do with it, and age. And you're able to see both. And the beauty of the Poisson regression now is it's up to you which one you want to be fussing about. Or you can have both in the model. In the Cox model, those of you who went to the Cox model, were stuck. You have to decide which time axis you use for the Cox model. Who did the Cox model? What time axis did you use? Or did it even occur to you?
Might not occur to us, but I think we did calendar time after 1912.
So that's basically Titanic time.
Titanic time, yeah.
Could you have thought of another time axis? Because then what's happening then is, where are your risk sets now? So if you're doing this, this is Titanic time going this way. So where are your risk sets now? How do the risk sets get formed in the Cox model? You line them up by the time. So the first risk set is the very first person that died. The same year, probably, right? The two you were talking about, right? So those two kids. So they define the first risk set. And then you move on from there and every death along the way, right? And what can you put in the model now?
Put age in.
You can put age in the model. So, because he's matching on calendar time, the risk set has all the people who were around at the time that person died. So it's matched on calendar time, every risk set. Right? And now you have to put age in the model. Given what Mr. Gumpert's found, how complicated is age? It's nasty. It's about 8%, but it can get, you know, it could be a lot nastier than that. So now you have to model age. Right? You have to model the effect of age in the Cox model. Age is a tough thing to model carefully in a Cox model because it has several order of magnitudes, rates, vary by several orders of magnitudes as you go across the age range. Right? And let's say there was a bump in the middle and there were other things, you were spending a lot of time to get the age modeling right.
Right. So just putting it in by itself, you've just got it linear. Like, you get older, you die a bit more.
Well, yeah. Yeah, exactly. But could you imagine, let's say it was, breast cancer mortality in women and you had premenopausal and postmenopausal and lots of ugly splines and things like that? No. Well, it will time vary, of course. The hazard time varies, yeah, by age. But what Cox said, when the issue came up, of we have a choice of two time scales now. You follow me? The time scale you can measure from Titanic time. What's the other time scale? You have it there. Age. Age could be your other time scale. In other words, instead of looking at all the risk sets, at the first risk set when the first person died, and in there then are all the people, right? All the people all the way from 0 to 100 nearly, or 60. There's a huge range, right? The other thing could be to say, hey, I will do my time as my cost axis, and now the risk set would be, here's an 18-year-old, right? Who else is in the risk set? Who died? Who else is in the risk set then? Other 18-year-olds. A 60-year-old risk set? Other 60-year-olds. Do you have to worry about age now? It's matched. So if you do the Cox model with age as the time factor, you've matched it out at the analysis. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to model it. So Cox's rule, or advice, was when you have a choice of time scales, and here you do, same with the Framingham. Framingham, choice of time scale. Framingham time from when they got the first grant, is the origin, time origin in the Cox model, if you do it a lot that way. But age is a much stronger effect than that, and calendar time. So Cox says, which is harder to model? Use that and match it. Use it, match on that. Don't take on the hardest challenge and put and modeling the hardest one. You match them the hardest one. And then if there's another one you have to put in, so now we're going up to 45-year-olds now. Now we have matched on age, we now have to adjust for calendar time. But that's a much smaller effect.
It's probably like
time.
Yeah, we're just more linear.
It's good, yeah. So you have a much easier time modeling calendar time effects, which are slow and small,
right.
Versus age effects, which are big. You're going across several orders of magnitude. So that was his advice. So it's very good advice, right? If you think of the Cox model as whatever you put as the time scale, you've matched on. Jesse, by the way, in the stuff you're doing, you're not, you know, the whole point of the case-based stuff is that you're not matching anything. Because you want the effect of everything, right? Yeah. You want the effect of age and time and follow-up time and everything else. So, but in etiology, because you're doing prediction kind of stuff. But if you were doing etiologic stuff, you want to match them as much as you can, and I don't care about them. I just want to get rid of them as a nuisance. So, yeah, so you match on the toughest variable that you would have be embarrassed or there'd be a fight about the modeling. And then you can put in as adjustments then the lesser time scale. So it was a very important thing. And at the beginning when Cox was doing it, Cox really said, I want to do the semi-parametric method. I think he did it mainly as a way just to make the likelihood easier. And well, he didn't want to model the lambda zero function in the hazard function. You know this baseline function? He said, I don't want to model lambda zero of t. It's too messy, so I'll condition it out by matching it. Right? At each risk set, you have the same time for everybody. So that's why. Okay, I think that's as much as that. So yeah, so the last one. So let's do the one here that's relevant. So you can see that age effect is very big, 8% per year. That's highly irrelevant. So it'd be much better to match on that in the Cox model. And period, you see, is only a small effect. And it's negative. That means death rates are falling over time. Right? But that would be a much easier one to put a linear one. You wouldn't be very wrong.
It looks like the data for a pair, like it was 1912. Like it was just like fixed for everyone.
Where's that?
Period. If you look at the data set, like all the columns had 1912. That was the zero value for the period. So that's why we were wondering, like, why is it included, like, in the...
But I think here we have it doubled now. It's changing now because I think initially we only had them... Is yours slicing it two ways or only one way? Yeah, but there's two lexuses. One lexus only splits on age, and the other age splits on lexus and period. And if you do that, then it starts updating the period. Which one?
I think like the single L.
The single L is just on...
And then double L has...
Double, yeah. So, yeah, that's only one slice one way.
Okay.
Yeah, but if you slice it a second time, then it'll start moving the periods with you.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the point. Because you're right, if you just do it once,
yes.
I think it's only slicing the In fact, it doesn't even slice anything because...
Wait, because it's just 1912, like every... Like,
yeah. That's right, that's right. Yeah, that's all there is, yeah, yeah, yeah. But as soon as you slice it two ways, you'll get the double dimension of this. Exactly. And you could probably even slice this a third way if you could think of it, right? You could splice by blood pressure or some other thing or, you know, anything you want, I guess. I don't know, because it's just... It's basically cutting up that diagram and segregating it into layers as well. Like the first thing is, I think of that Lexis diagram as not one Lexis diagram. I think of this as two Lexis diagrams. One here for males and another one outside of it for females. You know, separately. And then you have it for six of them, because if you have classes and gender, you have six layers of this. So when you're doing the analysis, you're using the same squares, but comparing different... So I think those are the last things from that. Age, yeah, so age makes sense. And this is age continuous, so that makes sense. And these factors weren't very big anyway, anymore. And the female, okay, so the last one is the female one, right? So that's now saying what? What's e to the minus that?
You get the 0.65.
Five, that's it. So there's the one we were talking about. Yeah, 0.65. And remember, if I said if I take the log of 0.65, well, the log of 0.65 is 0.4. If I divide I don't need any calculator now. If I divide 0.4 by 10, I get 4 years. You see what I mean? So just dividing that by 10 gets you your 4 years. See what I mean? I mean, pretty rough. I mean, we call this good enough for government work. It's not an exact science. But we think it's better to have something than nothing. Where those Harvard guys are. The Harvard guys, God knows what they would have called this. Right? That would have been 65. That would have called a 35% longer life. Right? Right? That's what they would have said. Yeah, because it's a 65. Right? Yeah, yeah. Okay. So we have time for one more.
So here it's
in
the
class
level.
Correct.
Yeah, the class level.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just got a question about choosing the time scale in the Cox model.
Yeah.
We were talking before about like the Kaplan-Meier curves, how it's sort of, in this case it's fine, but it's sort of dangerous to choose time before the curve.
Yeah.
So is that why in the Cox model, in this case, we have the flexibility to choose our time scale?
Well, and first thing is, in this Cox model, I wouldn't have age here.
Yeah.
I could, but I mean, wait a second now.
Like using age as our time scale, but a lot of people, like at age.
But I don't start them, I don't start you until you get off the thing. So in other words, how would I put it? Yeah, so this is starting you at whatever age you are when you get off the model, off the boat.
Right,
so,
yes.
Yeah, yeah, so this is taking care of it already. Age, yeah, because you start, you see, this is the nice thing of using the Lexis diagram, it forces you to start here, right? They don't take anything before that.
I'm not doing everyone's age starting at zero.
No, if whatever you see in the surface of the Lexis diagram is the amount of experience you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, so it's quite neat, yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, it's a very good bookkeeping thing, and I've been in a big campaign here for 10 years. Same with the screening people, we need it there. And I can't get people here to teach it because they think it's too basic. And yet, you know, I was explaining breast cancer screening at age 50 to 65 in Ireland. It only started in the year 2000. So now I'm trying to figure out, were my sisters in it? Was my mother in it? You know, you have to do that. But I was talking to my 85-year-old aunt, and I showed her the Lexis diagram. I said, Nora, where were you in this? And she instantly figured out where she was in the Lexis diagram. Instantly. Yeah. You know, you can follow yourself. And so it's very good for that kind of bookkeeping of stuff like that. Okay, who will we do next? Sorry, I looked at them last night, the other three. Let's just do them in the order they came. But... much time. Okay, so now what did you guys do? Oh, good. This is a very different way of doing things now. But sounds fancy. Come on now, you have to explain it to us. What the hell does this mean? This is high tech, right? This wasn't around when I was growing up, propensity score. And I'm going to show you what I did in a minute. That's close to it. I'll send it to you. But we did it. Same idea, but no fancy words there. Yeah. So what's the point here of propensity score adjustments? The first thing is, and I think this is very useful here, didn't I ask you guys, did you know the age? But look, there you have your females and males. There's a difference of 2.5 years. You see it right there. So there's your confounding right there. Isn't that right? And there's your second confounding, if there is any. Is there? Some, yeah. And God knows which direction is. Who is more advantaged here, the women or the men? If you were the insurance company, who would you rather be insuring for the same premium? This crowd or this crowd?
Women.
Why?
They've got more money. No. Oh, wait. Oh, it's a bigger liability, I guess.
No, I'm not treating them. They're the same thing. But, I mean, who's a higher risk here from the insurance company's point of view?
The men, there are more of them in the lower classes. Well, actually, I don't know. No. But the men
they haven't even all reached 29 yet, so they have to do this. This is the thing I'm saying. They could die in the next 2 years before 29. These ones can't, right? See what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a bit of that. It's tricky now to know who's going to live longer just from that. Yeah. But that's the way you should be thinking about it from the two insurance companies' point of view, right? Yeah. So anyway, the point here is that there's some confounding. We don't know which way it's going to go. It's tricky to think about, but they're definitely different. So what you want now is a comparison of fair with fair, so you want to try and make a fair comparison. Is that how you put it? Your propensity score?
Yes.
Yeah. And tell us how you do it then. How do you... No, but say it in English. He did the computing. How did you do it in English first? How would you say it in English? Yeah, but here normally in epidemiology this would be called exposed and unexposed, right? This would be called exposed and unexposed in epidemiology, or treated and untreated. Those are the places where it's used: treated and untreated, exposed and unexposed, right? And the point is, exposed and the unexposed have different risk profiles, or confounding. You know, there's confounding. So regular standardization will kind of fix it up. You will see a way to do that in a minute. But this propensity score does what, basically? If this was a treatment and no treatment.
It matches them.
Yeah, on what? What's the scale? On the probability of getting treatment. On the probability of getting treatment. On the probability of being a female. Here, which is hard to think about, the probability of being a female, but that if you pick somebody, they're a female.
Is it not on the probability of dying? Oh,
No. The propensity score models the probability of getting the treatment.
Yes. Okay.
And then it says people are the same from a matching point of view, they're like twins, if their predicted probabilities, or whatever you want to call them, of getting exposed or getting treatment are the same. So it says, you could have this profile, I can have that, but if we have the same chance of getting treatment, then I can match you two guys. So it has a treatment model, you hear it all the time in our biostat seminars, huh? It's a treatment model, which is a logistic regression typically, right?
Yep.
A logistic regression, you use these covariates, right? And then it'll give everybody a score, and then and that means, what's the chance that they were a female? I mean, there's no chance that they were a female, but what's the chance that people like them would be female? If I just show you this covariate one, what's the chance you think it's a female? Right? What's the chance? And so if they have the same chance to be looking like a female, then they're matched together, and then it's like a paired t-test with them. Okay? So instead of having exposed and unexposed crudely done, You match them first, you rearrange them, basically, and you know then the matches this way, this way, this way, this way, this way. Isn't that right? Yeah. And so now, here's the scores they get, right? And what I like about this is not so bad, right?
Yes.
Depending on your covariates now, if I just give you a covariate pattern, the chance that you're a woman could vary from 55% to 85%. If it was a randomized trial, what would it be? 50-50. If it was, yeah. So 50-50 is what it is in a randomized trial, but here, because there's differences in covariates as to who gets what, the probabilities are spread out. Right? Yeah. And so then you take the women in this bin here, you take the women and the men who had a 55% profile. You take the women and the men who had the 65% profile. The women and the men who had the 75% profile. So you're matching them up on just this single number now, which is some sense of how... right, you take it basically says people with the same score have the same everything else. Yeah, but even though they may not have the individual pieces of it that are the same, as long as the total balancing score is the same, they're identical from a twinning point of view. Isn't that how you do it? Yeah, yeah. And is this distribution of propensity scores good or bad for those who haven't taken a course? Any of you have taken a course in where it is talked about? You don't want extreme ones. When there's a very low probability, it's a bit scary because you're going to use the inverse of the weight, first of all. And you don't want it too high either. So if there's extreme probabilities, people get uncomfortable with that. So they like to have an overlap and have it to be near 50%. It's good. Or near, you know, they're nearly all the same. But I'm no expert in this area. We're just picking up as I go. And then, what do you do then? So once you have these scores, do you actually do a pair of t-test then?
No, so we compute the inverse weights.
Oh, so the inverse weights. Sorry. So you're not going to match them on it. You're going to use... Sorry. That's... I'm in the wrong class here. Yeah. It's a different one for that. Yeah. You can match them on the propensity score. Or you can do this thing instead. You're right. Yours is different. Yeah. So here you use the inverse weight. Yeah. And then you have now a simple regression. Right? And yeah, so they're reweighted. Sorry, I meant it's a very different, actually, not very different. You kind of use the same scores, but it's a bit different.
But we don't do this after the inverse, We don't do much of the inverse, we use the scores.
So you've learned the propensity one?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, anyway, yeah, but they're kind of close to each other in one sense because you use the probabilities, right, for both. Yeah, okay. So, but yes, but now the point is in here, look at what you use. That's the key. So this now says that some people get weighted more than others. Right? And less than others. I don't think this is very different than standardization. It's a form of standardization, because when you talk about standardized mortality rates, standardized means, standardized anything, you're taking a weighted average. Which means some people are being upweighted or downweighted in the same way. So to me, this inverse probability of weighting thing, and did you read Hernan's paper, which is a translation of Robin's paper? If you do the propensity score thing, the IPTW, he talks about a pseudo-population and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, he's basically kind of saying, I'm reweighting these. Yeah. To make it a fair comparison.
That one we ended up getting, if we were to match on the propensity score, it's almost the same.
I think so, yeah. And here you're coming out to 4 years, right? 4.2. What did it come out to? It was about 5 years if you didn't. If you did a crude one, it would be about 5 years. So this has reduced the difference a bit, because I guess the women were at an advantage in some sense.
But I think that's years after the sinking.
Oh yeah, years after. Yeah, this is all years after sinking. Yeah. So it's a little different. Yeah. It's four, so this is basically 40 years more for the men, and 44 years for the women. Yeah. So this is a reweighted. But one way, I'll stop then after this, but the way I think of this is, let's say we had to have a soccer game here between two teams, and I divided like this. This is team one and this is team two, right? And we're going to get so many goals or whatever the thing we're going to measure at the end, right? Who's better, this team or this team, right? And this team is going to get some treatment as well, chocolates or something. This one won't, or be deprived of sleep for a night or something, some experimental thing. But if we were doing that and trying to figure out we could get the wrong answer, you'd complain because you said, come on, let's divide up. Look at the heights of these people are here. Look at their this. Look at their that. Look, who, I'm on that team. That's going to drag them down, you know, stuff like that. So what are ways to fix up an imbalance when you have two teams that you can't make even? Let's say we're going to do it. Yeah, this is kids, two kids' soccer teams. But they're not even. So how do you even them up?
You attach weight to us so we can
slow our tires. That's right. If you attach weight to you, that's like regression adjustment. Because
yeah.
I say, you're 30 years younger than me, so I'm going to give you 40 extra pounds onto you because it's 1 pound per year. That's a regression adjustment, isn't it? And you work out how much weight per pound or whatever, or per age,
per year, yeah.
By some data set tells you what to handicap. By the way, handicapping, where's the first place of handicapping?
Golf.
No, long before golf. Golf has handicapping as a way to make fair games. There's another one that's used, horse racing. In horse racing, horses have handicaps. And sometimes, how do they do it there? You're not joking. You add weight to the saddle. You add weight to the saddle of the horse. There's weight put in to make some horses. Yeah, they have races between yachts, and they're all different sizes, and they have to do a handicapping there as well with formulas. Yeah, exactly. And then sometimes a jockey, you can have in some horse races, the jockey can be as little as, let's say, 110 pounds. And then what happens if the jockey is 115 pounds, what do? He has to go to a sweat box and basically get off 5 pounds, or you use a different jockey. Yeah, so that's one. That's how I call it regression adjustment. What are the other options? Yeah, so you're saying, look, I don't like this team. You go over there with them, because I know how good you are, so you have to go with them, right? Right? That's another way. You're shuffling around the team, right? Or, what's another way? I count you half your score, or something like that. I count you twice, or something. For every goal you get, I'll count it twice, or something like that. That's kind of what we're doing here, isn't it? We're rebalancing the team to make it fair. Right? So it is re-weighting, but it's...
weighting the outcome, not the predictor, I guess.
Yeah, something like that. Well, no, I think if the regression is fooling around with the outcome.
Okay.
I think if this is fooling around with the composition of the team, right? The probability being in the team, yeah. So it, yeah, exactly, something like that. Yeah. And standardization is a bit like that. So it's basically then saying I have one, a proper fair weighted average, a fair average, or a fair weighting of both, right? And so when we do standardization, we use common weights on both sides. That keeps it fair as well. Right? Common weights on both sides. So then it's a fair comparison. Right? So all these are very closely linked to each other, and the inverse probability of weighting is a kind of standardization. And I'll finish with that. But the place where I'm going to show you my own, which is a standardized... somebody did standardized rates, I think, no? You did SMR. Yeah. You can also do standardized longevity. There's nothing special about standardization that applies only to proportions. Right? You could have a linear combination of weight, combination of means as well. So what I did last night is I made a linear combination of means. I took the means inside of each cell, and then a common set of weights for both, and then took a weighted average of the mean longevity, which was about 40 years or 45 years. right? But different by sense. Right? So standardization is just means using the same weighted average for both. And I guess the IPTW is trying to make it a fair set of weights for both. Isn't that right? From there. And just, I'll send you along the point, but for those of you who deal with standardization, which is an old-fashioned technique now, there was a very, very scary article in American Journal of Public Health, I think, about a year ago. There had been this talk in Spain, that the economic austerity in Spain was really hurting people. And a lot of countries in Europe, the austerity is really hurting. Because they had to tighten up to, you know, stay within the EU and all that. And there were cuts to health care services and all sorts of things. So there's a big study that caused a lot of trouble from a crowd that are after the government about stopping this austerity thing. It's killing people. And they basically showed that the age standardized mortality rates in Spain went way up the year after the austerity. And it went on and on and on, a lot of debate about this, and this is really hurting people, and it's the austerity that's causing. So the standardized mortality rate shot up the year after the austerity program started, and has stayed up since. It has stayed up. What are the other possible explanations? And it was a standardized mortality rate. So that means, standardized mortality rate means they have a standard population, which is 20% in their 60s, 30% in their 50s, 45% in their 40s, whatever. There's some kind of a standard mix of ages. Right? That's called the standard, and you use that for before austerity and after austerity. Right? That's the comparison. You have before and after, you have the rates before, the rates after, you take a same weighted average of the rates before and the same weighted average of the weights after. So that, right? Age can't, is out of the picture. What do you think could have happened that caused this? And the authors kind of referred to it in the original paper, and they still got it published. And now it took 2 years to finally somebody straighten out what the hell went on and explain and put it out in great detail what went on. The European Union changed the standard age distribution. There's a standard age, there's a WHO age distribution that's used for standardization. The European Union has its own. The European Union changed the standard age distribution a couple of years ago, and the Spanish rates now are calculated with the new one. Right? But the old ones were calculated with the other weights. So now you see a problem? They don't recalculate the old, we'll go back and redo it. They have, the rates are calculated each year using a standard. And then they changed the age distribution, and all of a sudden everything moved up. So what do you think happened? What must have happened? What's the age distribution now? It's older. It's an older age. So the mix of ages now is much older. And that's what dragged up the rates in the next year, right? So the example I give to people with standardization, this is hard to explain to your parents, right? There's another thing we track with standardization, with a standard mix. Anybody know what I'm talking about? To do with food. Food prices, we keep track of food prices of how they're going up. And how do we do it? There's a kind of a food index. Well, maybe it's in it, yeah, but it's, I don't know, it's only McDonald's. Yeah, McDonald's is used as well as an index across countries.
The basket of
food. A food basket. There's a basket of food, that's the standard basket of food. Right? And then you apply the prices to the basket, and then that's how you track. So, and everyone would understand that, I think in the public, a standard basket of food. Right? And that the price has gone up for it. Yeah, so that's a mix of foods. Right? Think of standardization. Age standardization is a mix, a basket of ages. Isn't it a basket of ages? And you're applying rates to that basket. Just like you apply prices to the basket of food. And that's all age standardization is. Right? It's an agreed on basket of ages. But unfortunately, when the EU changed it, they forgot to recalculate. Well, they didn't, but Spain just left the standardized rates the way they were, then moved to the new one, calculated again, and you're right. It must have been that the ages, probably because Spain is getting older. And because Spain is getting older, they made the basket older. And so that's what we have.
So they used a different standard of population the very same year that austerity came into place.
Yes, or the year after. Yeah, yeah.
The year after.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And it was a very, very, anyway, you can be packing up and getting out of here. Is this the one? No. You see, there's an Irish group also complaining about it, that the austerity program is doing the same thing. Spain, recession, austerity, and life. Yeah. This one. How do you like that? This is what it took. 2 years of fighting about this paper, right? And the whole thing was obvious on day one. Look what happened.
Yeah.
Look at, I mean, you don't see mortality rates taking a dive or a move like that, right? Yeah, crazy.
There'd be bodies in the streets.
And look at it. Furthermore, as the Spanish National Statistics Institute changed in 2001 the standard population to this, we have shown that that didn't really change anything. A similar trend. So they kind of knew about it, but said, no, no, that's not the issue. And then finally, a couple of years later, you know, it takes a new paper, right? This is the message. Right? Which was should have been obvious to any reviewer. But and when you, as you said, when you see a thing like that. Okay, I'll send you guys. So I think next week we'll stay on the... not the survival thing, but on the Oscars thing now, the longevity for the Oscars. And again, I'll have to send you the code. But there, it's a little more complicated because people go out of the lifeboat into another boat. In other words, they're going from nominee. So some of the time they're in the nominee boat, and some of the time they switch to another boat. So it's a bit more complicated, right? But and now you'll see why the Lexis diagram and chunks of time are very key now. Because you spend some of your time in one place, some of the time in the other. Right? So you've already got the idea of dividing up your life.
Yeah.
But now what will happen is you won't be a female anymore, you'll be a male. You see what I mean? Or you'll be a nominee,
no,
and now you'll be in the other side. So you're contributing to both.
Right. Yeah.
Some to one, some to the other.
Complicated thing,
but yeah. But it's a natural progression from what we're doing. Take away more of these. I don't want to be eating them all day. I do, but I don't want to. Take some more. So you see, this is starting to tie together. This Lexis stuff and all this other stuff is all part of the same thing now.
Yeah, they're all sort of.
They're all connected.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's kind of cool.
No, it's a good way to think about it. Yeah.